You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall. It's not Niall. I'm just reading out what it says in the script because he's recovering from his jab. We still won't be able to find out which one it is. Stay tuned next week, viewers, to find out which jab he had.
Jab conclusion.
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering anime that aired the week of the 31st of May, 2021 to the 6th of June, 2021. I've got the window closed. I've got my fans off. I'm going to be absolutely steaming by the end of this podcast.
Do you want to crack a window now? Just like
no, it's all right.
I'll just fill some dinner.
This will give the impetus to crack through these episodes as quickly as possible.
I'll endeavor to do that.
Righty ho, we're going to start off with Moriarty the Patriot, episode 20, The White Knight of London, Act 2. In which things go very badly for our MP, Mr. Whiteley, because Milverton.
Can go wrong.
Yes, he's insulted when Whiteley tries to blackmail a blackmailer. He's having none of this. But also, anyway, that had no bearing whatsoever because he was already going to go through with these plans regardless.
Yeah, it's pretty much like he uses it as justification for himself. It's just like, I don't respond to acts of terrorism. Just some kind of bullshit. But also he keeps like narrating over things. It's like, oh, but true evil is tempting good men to do evil.
Yes.
That's what all the devils and everything want. It's just like, obviously the fun of it is tempting people. And I am true evil, which is different from the Moriarty's evil because yes. They are evil for the greater good.
Yes. And I think, I think the Moriartys are slightly misjudging Milverton, in that they seem to think, I think there's a line somewhere which gives the impression that they're under the impression that he's trying to like protect the status quo, but he's not. He's just an absolute asshole who likes making good people do bad things.
Yeah, more so someone who's reveling in his own ability to wield power as a bludgeon.
Yeah. But essentially, what he ends up doing is, Dwayne's off.
Sorry. There's something behind me keeps showing up, so I'm just shoving it out of my way.
Milverton ends up blackmailing one of the inspectors who are acting as Whiteley's bodyguard into murdering the entire household. So this will force Whiteley to murder the policeman. He's done this,
and even that guy has been corrupted because he's like, "Hey, did you kill my wheelchair bound little brother?" He's like, "Yeah, I had to. Otherwise, my wife and kid would have been murdered." But you know, so I had to do this thing. So you know, here's the knife I used to kill your family. Have at it. And he's like, "I can't do it." And it's like, "No, he definitely can do it."
He does do it
just as a reaction.
So then he has to turn to the Moriartys to find a way out of this situation, which involves...
Well, initially he just wants to give them the blackmail information back, because it's like, I can't use this because they're just going to use the fact that I murdered a man in cold blood, and it probably looks like he murdered his own family. They're probably going to use that against me.
There's a way out of this, though. More murder!
We'll murder our way out of this hole. Yeah.
William... stabs Whiteley to death in front of the House of Commons after his...
Not before Whiteley, all the reporters, he says, it's like, what are you going to do? What's your reaction to this, Mr. Whiteley? Or Lord Whiteley, or whatever. And he's kind of like, no, I'm going to continue on through. Nothing can stop me from doing the right thing except for getting stabbed right now. Bleed out on the front of the steps of the house. And the Lord of Crime announces, hello, it's me, the Lord of Crime. I did this. And also I killed his family. No one can stop me. And the police, sorry, not the police commissioner, he's the head of Scotland Yard, isn't he? He's like, men, get him, where he's secretly thinking, it's like, I'm working for this guy, this is really weird. Is he in on it, or is he just reacting to the situation as he needs to?
I guess, I don't know. On a need-to-know basis, maybe it is.
Maybe, yeah.
There's also some stuff with Fred fighting the two very anime characters.
Because Fred was going to intercede and stop Whiteley's family get killed, except freaking like Chrome Dome fucking and Knife Kid show up. They're very like evil villain fucking characters, more so than everything so far. I think everything
except
so far.
Maybe their former butler who trained them how to fight.
Yeah,
the original Jack the Ripper might be also up there.
He's definitely in supervillain territory, but he seems nice. I guess it's the difference.
Yeah,
these guys just seem like they like murder.
My worry is that this was a 4-chapter story adapted in 2 episodes, and next week we get a 4-chapter story adapted in 1 episode.
God, they really want to get to those fucking Rick and Back and Falls.
They do,
I get it. I'm excited at how fast the story is proceeding and how exciting it is and all the mad fucking shit that happens in it. But it's just like, you don't need to rush it, guys. I'm having a good time.
I think maybe they do. They maybe think we're just getting one series out of this.
That's always the worry. You're cancelled before you get to the thing you want to.
It moved, like I say, it moves along at a pace because it has to. So goodness knows what it's going to be like next week when they introduce John Watson's betrothed, which I think then you're really getting into just copying the BBC most recent Sherlock adaptation, I think.
Yeah.
Because I think it's her story is where the blackmailer, their version of the blackmailer character turns up in the BBC version. But I guess you've got to do it because he's the worst person according to Conan Doyle's Holmes. He's the worst person he ever faced. He's the suitable villain. Then we've got A Dragon Goes House Hunting, episode 9, A Home for a Black Dragon. So it turns out this is not the dad. This is a fella called Varney. This black dragon.
I think it's Barney the Black Dragon is what it's supposed to be, right?
Could be, yes.
Because that just really...
Either it's like... based on the act of Reg Varney on the buses, the 70, the grimy 70s sitcom. So he just basically bullies the Dark Lord, Deeria, in his past to help him look for a home, which mainly seems
Deeria
to...
Deeria didn't want to do anything. He's like, hey, I'm the Dark Lord, but I don't want anything. But then he's... Snake Ma'am shows up,
yes,
and she's kind of like, oh, you've got a new friend. Yeah, you should go off with him. The dragon's like, yeah, thanks, lady. He's just been a real pushy guy, even though he's like, I researched how to talk politely. I looked into how fucking you two-legged motherfuckers, I got a drawing of you to find you and be very polite to you, which he has not shown any of that. But Deeria does learn some stuff along the way to finding that dragon house, which is mostly how to explode adventurer guilds.
Yes, and it's a nice little flip of like, oh, in this story, Deeria's the slightly naive one, as opposed to Letty.
The slightly naive one dragging instead of him dragging a naive person around, he's the naive one being dragged around.
For 100 years, so they look for a house for this dragon, because he's not getting any younger, he needs to find a place to invite some lady dragons back to.
That's his reason. He wants to settle down. Hey, I've been the big crap. I've forgotten the name of the evil black dragon in Skyrim. He's been the evil big dragon for ages. It's like, I gotta settle down and start a family.
It's like
a dream of mine. Yeah.
Yeah, because he's called the Dark Dragon. So somebody's like, does the Dark Lord sound better than the Dark Dragon? He gets a little bit jealous. The first place they attack, which is probably the longest sequence, is. He just smashes through this Hero Guild's headquarters through the door, beats everybody
just
up.
Like, knock, knock, motherfuckers, just busting the door in with his fist. At some stages, the Dark Dragon and the adventurers are united against the Dark Lord, at least in what is cool.
Yes. They eventually send all the adventurers to the church to get healed up, and then he's like, okay, yeah, we're not going to... Okay, it's like, Deeria's like, okay, right, we've got you home, I can be off. Said, no, I'm not going to stay here. Look at the quality of this door. It broke as soon as I knocked on it. It's like, he could have left then. We didn't have to do all this fighting, because he could have left as soon as you knocked it. And then it's
it kind of changes the context of all the guys he's been murdering up to now, where he's been teleporting them after lightning striking them to a church to be, I assume, resurrected for an exorbitant fee.
And then a lot of the rest of it is them looking for places, but basically just criticizing workmanship on various buildings.
Look at this fucking cowboys, like kicking in the shelving unit or whatever the hell. It's very, very funny. There's like, well, will marble burn? Let's fucking go to this Marble Heroes Guild and see what fucking happens.
And then we see like a little shot as he's wondering what happened to Varney with him and all his wives at whatever castle they finally settled in.
He figured out something without the area. I'm guessing that gave him a good basis on what to look for.
And then who knows, next week maybe they'll introduce the other main character. It was like, it's taken a very long time to get to her.
I know, it's weird. Like, she's in the opening and everything. But it's next week is a hero or a hunter goes dragon hunting or something like that. Dragon hunting rather than house hunting is next week. Because they keep changing the format of the show. But it'll probably have to do with architecture at some point.
So I'll assume we'll be the monster hunter characters rather than the heroes this time. Then on the same night we've got Megalobox Nomad episode 9. I'm not going to try the Spanish. I will tell you though, it translates to "the way in which to live cannot be counted on one hand. Even still, there are ways to survive."
"Una sola mano no basta vivir, pero anase la forma de vivir prevalete." That's the word that kept fucking tripping me up.
And this is what they say on the website. "Yukiko struggles to balance her concerns over the safety aspect of the implant chip in Mac's brain and her role as the head of the Shirato Cooperation."
In a bunch of ways, it feels like a different show, but not in a bad way.
"Meanwhile, Sachio runs into Joe at Nambu's grave and finds himself still unable to accept Joe's return. As the two grow further apart, Storm is fast approaching once again." That's pretty much what happened. It's except of course, this show is sometimes too melodramatic for my tastes. The reveal of Max Kidd having had some sort of heart operation in the past.
Oh my god, that was a real fucking, like, you know, he kind of turns in his sleep and like he's had an operation. I'm just like, oh man, fucking, you're really tugging at the heartstrings, like literally in this case, I guess.
And like, they're reading this book, and I looked up the English title they give it. I didn't look up the Spanish title. So I don't know whether this is a real book, but my deep suspicion is it's one they've made up for the show.
I'm full sure I've heard that as a fairy tale before.
Maybe. I mean, I hope
I've heard something very similar.
If it is, then that's fine. If it's not, then I'm like, you can't make your own fairy tale to do a metaphor around it.
If they can make robot boxing arms, they can make whatever the hell they want.
But there's kind of like this balance of, and the other problem is this, the head of the new corporation just being the brother again, of like, we're gonna use it in the army.
That's not a thing that people aren't going to keep trying to do.
It's like his motivation feels very much like the motivation of the brother in the first series, except because he's not actually getting the boxing ring himself.
He's smarter than that, at least. I'll give him that. Let someone else take the fucking punches for you.
It feels a bit too much of a retread for me. And a little bit too much. But I liked a lot. I liked the stuff with the kids and Joe. And I like the stuff with Liu this episode. It's natural
that they're kind of growing back together. The stuff with Liu is kind of presented as tragic, but he's still presented as like a full fucking character with his own motivation and everything. Really interesting stuff. Like, I get what you're saying about a retread, but the way I kind of think it is like, history's a fucking circle, patterns kind of repeating themselves, but with variations. You're always going to have some greedy motherfucker trying to make money no matter what, especially like if it hurts people, fine.
Yeah.
That's not his problem.
Well, yeah, see, I'm not entirely sure he's entirely, I don't think he's necessarily on those lines. I think he's a dangerous optimist.
Yeah.
And it's positioned the sister as a pragmatist and the brother is the realist in this equation. Because she doesn't want to, she's got her suspicions, but she doesn't want to leave immediately because she thinks somehow if she sticks around, then
maybe she can fix it. I think the guy thinks he's probably doing good. It's like, maybe it's a bad thing I'm doing to this guy, but I am helping him and his family out. And this, I mean, like, it's good that I'm helping out the military. It's good that I'm I've forgotten the bloody word. Soldiers who go away from a war. Veterans. I'm helping veterans.
Yes, because that's how he positions it.
Which is war. And I'm just like, dude, that's awful. Don't fucking do that.
Yeah. Well, I know. I think his idea is he's making them better, and then if they choose to go back to war, that's their choice. He's giving them the choice, is what he makes the point about.
Yeah, I like. You should be more concerned with ending war rather than continuing it.
Yes,
but so everyone's happy. Like that's not the same. Again, like you say, like weird kind of idealism. I think is the way.
Yes, because it's not like he's manipulating Mac's mind. He's as confused. He's concerned.
I was so worried they were going to do that, and I'm glad they haven't.
Yes, because we see him concerned about Mac's lack of sleep.
Mm.
He goes to see Mac, but at the same time, he's hiding the facts. He's going to get the, but not himself. He's going to get the scientists to hide the facts from the Sharatos. Yes, so like I say, I don't think in the same way the brother wasn't an out and out villain in the first one, but this guy films is a little bit too much of the same. But we'll see where it goes. No boxing in this one. Oh, have I lost you there? Hello? Oh, have I lost you, Dwayne? Earth to Dwayne. Are you back, Dwayne?
You were breaking up quite a bit there.
Oh, I was getting Skype noises from you.
Crunchy munchy. Oh well, sorry, I just missed the last thing you said.
No, that's fine. I'm sure it wasn't very interesting. I think it was basically Earth to Dwayne. Are you there, Dwayne?
Okay, yeah. Sorry about that.
Because you froze on my screen and I could hear I could hear Skype noises coming from your thing.
How odd.
Right.
Speaking of dramatic and to the point of melodrama, it's Fruits Basket time.
Yeah, tell me about Fruits Basket.
Episode 9. I got this wrong last week.
I got the episode title wrong last week, so don't worry about it.
Oh, I thought I put it in. My bad. This episode is Watch Your Name, and I've forgotten what it was last week. It's gone off. But yeah, episode 9 of Fruits Basket, the final season. So we kind of open on... trying to remember everyone's name. Niall is better at names than me. Most people are. We get our rat boy kind of coming across, like he went the wrong direction looking for Kyo, but he finds our older dog guy coming back from a drinking night with his buddies, so he's like, okay, Kyo didn't come this way, then we better head back and see if we can find him. Meanwhile, Toru is contending with Akido, who is she's got a knife, and the rain has stopped, but like the danger is clear and present. And Akido's kind of like in despair because it's like, oh, I'm losing all these kind of connections to me. And then Toru starts realizing, wait, I've been trying to free all these people from this curse, this bond that they're inherently attached to and they can't break the cycle of. But she didn't see that Akido was one of the ones suffering, if not as well, then possibly worse than them, because Akido has like the connection to them. So Akido knows anytime their connection is broken, and Akido's like trapped in the cycle more so than the rest of them, to the point where Akido doesn't know what it's like to have proper human love without this false love imposed on her by the curse, where the other somas automatically have to follow her and her feelings and that kind of thing. So Toru kind of starts trying to literally reach out to her and pity her and tell her that, you know, it's going to be okay. You'll be okay. I want to be there for you. But gets slashed in the arm like fucking twice. Until she kind of lets Akito know this kind of information that's like, I see you, and what the way you're suffering, like, really makes a connection to her. And Akito like literally runs away from this. Runs up the mountain a bit. Toru follows her and again reaches out to her. And Akito's about to, finally convinces Akito to nearly take Toru's hand. But wouldn't you know it? She was standing on a cliff. Cliff fucking collapses. She falls down the fucking cliff. And I was like, Jesus Christ. I'm glad they didn't end an episode on that, because that would have been too much for me to bear for the end of a week. But the other lads have to hurry to her, call an ambulance, that kind of thing. And also make sure Akito, I mean, like, Akito's pretty much talked down at this stage, but it's like, yeah, you stabbed a guy back in the Soma estate, and it looks like you tried to kill Toru, so we're going to have a look into that. But we do finally get when Kyo catches up after. He is like, this isn't what he wanted for Toru. He didn't want her to get hurt. He specifically wanted to separate himself from her, so she didn't get hurt, and this is kind of worse. But again, they're worried about moving the body, because, like, yeah, she hit her head, she's bleeding out, but she manages to reach up to him and say, it's like, hey, it's going to be okay, kind of thing. And it cuts back to, like, the hospital a few times. Akito's kind of crying outside, going, like, the fuck have I done with our rabbit Soma, or former rabbit Soma, kind of, like, not so much taking pity on her, but, like, understanding that she's showing, like, true remorse and everything while she visits the two people she put in hospital, I guess. But even with that, it kind of ends on a more positive thing. Like, it seems like Akito is able to step over the threshold into Toru's room when Toru's welcoming her again. And it's like, okay, we can kind of build our way out of this. So we're going for the super happy ending, even with all the fucking drama and tragedy on top, which is nice, that it finally gets there. Cause fucking hell, it's a lot of fucking drama and shit. There's only so much I can take. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Really quite good. I thought, like, making that kind of human connection to what is ostensibly the villain, but understanding that they're suffering in their own way through this, being brought up in this trauma and being a real piece of shit, because that's what she fucking learned to be, basically. Excellent stuff.
Then we've got Old Taxi, The Hero's Melancholy, episode 9, in which we start off with Odakawa on the phone to Little Daimon. Saying,
we forgot to say at the end of last episode, he did record a conversation with a criminal guy, saying, it's just like, you're asking a lot of leading questions in this fucking conversation. And that was the bless you from it, because he was sneezing to cover up a camera shutter noise on his phone, basically. Yeah.
So Lil Diamond calls and he's explaining that Kadehara's in this warehouse. In the docks, but Lil Daimon, that's out of his jurisdiction. He can't come along.
He's impressed at Odakawa's resolve as to be a hero and put his life on the line. Yeah.
Then we get see a scene with Kabasawa in bed with one of his groupies.
We get to see him at the highs and the fucking lows in this episode. It's very fun. Yeah.
Which doesn't go very well when she's like starts talking about what people are saying about him on the internet.
Ooh, that's a sore spot for him.
And he gets a slap for his troubles. Odakawa picks up Dobu and that he's trying to get him on board with rescuing Kanehada. He's like, we're not supposed to tread on each other's schemes and scams.
As long as we both get money to the boss, it doesn't matter what the fuck we do, so we shouldn't get in each other's way, because that interferes with the boss's money. Yeah.
But as they're discussing this, a white minivan is pursuing them and takes a pot shot at them.
Yeah, trying to ram them off the road and shit. Yes. It's very action fucking packed. I didn't expect it from this show.
Yeah, I would. This was the point I was wondering, should we be counting how many bullets have been fired from that gun?
That's the thing I was thinking as well. Yeah. Because literally, I assume he only has like one. We didn't see any bullets put away.
Don't think we did, no.
So presumably, if it's a six shot and it's got like six bullets, okay, one in this episode, one into Odakawa's house, Was it two shots in the nightclub?
I don't know. We'll
it was get... at least one shot, because that's when everyone ran out screaming. Like,
this is, of course, assuming that every time we've heard a shot, it's been that gun, and it's been him shooting it.
Yeah, that's true. There might be some other shit going on.
As we'll fucking... get to that as this episode goes by, because yes. The first time I watched this episode, there's a shooting where I thought it was one character doing the shooting. And yes. Then after watching episode 10, I came back and watched it again, because episode 10 does a thing where I was like, hang on a second, now do I need to go and check? It's not related to the thing which is revealed, but the thing which revealed made me think, are the characters we think we see always the characters we actually see?
Yes.
And this does a great thing of, like, it introduces, they get shot at by the guy, it's Tanaka, isn't it, the computer guy, yeah, the mobile game programmer. Yeah. So yeah, we think it's him. He's the one doing the shooting. We're talking. He's got. Dobby says, "I got to get my gun back. Got to get my gun back." Anyway, after they escape him, by Odakawa avoids a cat. That's the other important thing, because we now start seeing animals a lot in this episode.
That's so good in this episode. Like, so in the car chase, he nearly hits a cat, and he kind of swerves to avoid it, but kind of like swerves by accident to kind of face the oncoming van. And your man's like, oh fuck, he stopped right in front of me. So veers off and crashes, giving them a chance to escape.
Yeah. And also doing this, we get the Dobby going to Odaka, I thought you weren't afraid to die. I'm afraid of the pain.
Yeah. He doesn't want to get hurt. That's the thing that concerns him. And I'm not sure it's before this car chase or just after, but he does, I presume on like the forums for our would-be hero does text him with a picture of Dobu going into the fridge and going like, he'll be at this dock at this time.
Yeah.
If you want him, come get him, be a real hero or something like that. Yeah.
Goads him to coming along. Anyway, meanwhile, at the docks, Kanahata needs the loo.
And the bear is just being nasty. He's just like, I'm not going to be back for another like 3 days, so you better make the most of it now or something like that. They're still not sure what to do with this fucking guy. He's not going to get him any money, so it's like, eh.
It might be a patsy. It might be a good patsy for them. For their
is there a scheme we can use them in, kind of thing?
And then there's a knock on the warehouse door, which is Dobu and Odakawa. Sekiguchi goes to answer it with a cattle prod.
Mm.
But Dobu grabs him before he can hit Odakawa, and they get into a fight.
Again, more fucking action-packed stuff, and this and the next bit with Dobu shows like, oh, actually, Dobu isn't entirely shy. He kind of kicks that fucking polar bear's ass. He's a cattle prod.
While the fight's happening, Odakawa gets Kanahata out of there and they drive off.
Mm-hmm. It's a very slow rescue from Odakawa, but I was like, this feels right, honestly. Yes.
And then with Sekiguchi down, Kanahata out of the way, Dobu gets shot. And he's like, I thought you were amateur, you get so good, give me my gun back. And then, first time I watched it, I just went along with Dobu. I was like, okay, yeah, it's Tanaka, he followed them there.
Yeah.
And then I watched it again today, and you see the hands, and it's not Tanaka. It shot them.
Okay, what did the hands look like?
They have white gloves on, as if they're a policeman.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, that could be two different fucking policemen.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
One of them knows he's there and hates him for corrupting his brother.
You won't be able to tell the difference between the motherfuckers.
Yes, I know.
They're twins. Oh, it's so good.
it completely did a sleight of hand on me until they revealed another sleight of hand they'd done in the next episode. And then I had to go back and I was like, oh, I bet you've done more of these on me.
I haven't watched next one yet, but I'm gonna fucking watch it after this. Just it's such a well put together fucking show. Thoroughly, yeah.
It is. Then as they're driving back, we get a discussion of when Kanahata became a loser. And it was after they'd been on a school trip and he brought back this puzzle like box. And he put the family stamp in it. And
his mom had to put the post on for the postman, sign for something, and she couldn't get the fucking box open because it had like 36 steps or something ridiculous, and she just smashed it the fuck open. He's like, that's when you became a loser. And and then they both have a good laugh over this, and it's like, that is actually pretty funny as a personal kind of story. And Dobu confronts his attacker, which is,
well, yeah, we don't, it's not, because Kamisawa confronts Dobu
in a different way. You're right.
And he's like,
he's like, I got this motherfucker. Here's my selfie. Taking him. I'm going to take him to justice. All you call me a faker.
And he's like, have you got a gun? And then it just has like, why are you doing that? No, really, why are you doing?
Dobu like, gives him like, I mean, like Dobu also robs him at the end of this,
yes,
like by going like, give me all your money, your car, that apartment you bought with the donations to the your live blog or whatever the fuck. But also, here's some decent life advice. I was like, oh, yeah, you're right, Dobu. I guess like self-loathing is a kind of
narcissism.
Narcissism, yeah. I was just like, shit. Dobu's just like, yeah, I don't think, most people don't think about themselves that much. fucking really fun stuff, like that it turned from like action to, oh, I've been shot, to, hey, kid, you need to sort your fucking shit out.
Then we get a scene with Kanehara at the doctor's.
Mm.
We get the Kamisawa's video apology.
there will be no refunds at the end. Yes. Just cut me up, yeah.
Then Kanehara in the morning leaves the doctor's and goes to throw the ring away, and then has second thoughts and pulls
second
it back
out. Second thoughts after throwing it away.
Yes. Because
yeah. He's a fucking idiot.
And we've had the conversation in the previous episode where Yano thinks it's just a fake. He paid more than it was worth anyway.
Mm-hmm.
He was ripped off on that as well, because that's how big a loser he is.
Yeah.
And then we get Gariki going to visit the landlady. And we also discover that not only is she the landlady, she is Onokawa's legal guardian.
Mm.
And that his rent's been paid for his lifetime by a mysterious foundation.
Yeah. So his parents, like, because Gorky, like, oh, you're his friend. It's like, and then she kind of questions, like, are you his friend? Because you seem to be under the impression that his parents went missing or left him or something. It's like, no, motherfucker, they're dead. They're super dead. I'm his legal guardian. And he's always been sound out, but even when he was a kid, he didn't like me making dinner for him and stuff. And he insisted on paying me back for everything. And this organization has paid for the rent multiple times over. Like, he doesn't need to do it. And You know the owner looking like the dog, or the dog looking like the owner? Is that like the start of Odakawa's turning people into animals kind of thing?
I think it might be, yes.
That would be the suggestion I would have taken as well, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm also going to guess that the organization paying his rent is the same organization that Dobu and Yano work for.
Yeah, so were his parents connected, and therefore he's been taken care of?
Or they were accidentally killed in a...
Yeah,
in something which wasn't meant to happen, and
they cover it.
The highest ups feel guilty.
Yeah.
Because we know it seems like the older they are, the more guilt they have. Because we know the Tapia's got a degree of guilt about the girl going missing.
Yeah. He thinks it's his fault.
Dobu has some sort of guilt at various points, and Yano does not appear to have any at all.
no, he likes his job. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, that's how it's going to all... Just because they named the boss the Don as well, that it is somehow going to be the Rakugo guy is in charge of the Yakuza at the top and is the father of the missing cat. And he's got the eraser somehow of the man who's looking after him. It feels like it's all going to somehow connect together at the end.
So, like... You're saying the I think he's like a mandrel or something like that. That guy's the Don of the...
We don't know yet, but he's called... His name's got Don in it, and he's the only person called Don and who's been mentioned.
The reason why there was only one eraser in the world of this guy, as part of a money laundering scheme, presumably, which means that cat might kill a fucking mafia boss if he finds out that motherfucker
is connected. He is the wild card.
Definitely, because he is not. I mean, like we can take guesses, but he's not connected to anyone on their fucking chart that they put out.
We'll leave it at that in case I say anything else about next week's episode. Because
fair enough.
Things change. Then we've got Zombieland Saga Revenge, Episode 9: The Saga Incident Part 2. which pretty much plays out how you'd expect from the first part, is that Ito's there to suppress rebellion, but Kiichi's pamphlets attract the attention of such people who would prefer rebellion as to posting leaflets around town. And this leads to Yugiri having to save Kiichi from Ito via swordplay, because these were the survival skills she was trained by her patron.
Learning how to survive in the world was part of that, yeah.
But also, I feel... I think there's some hint as to who the patron is, and he's a historical figure. But yeah, I didn't look into it. No, I don't think they say the name.
I mean, they have all the fucking dates there, so it's probably really easy to fucking check.
And I think it's like something about she tells Kiichi to go and see some friends in these particular towns. And I was like, that feels like a reference to something historical that has flown straight over my head.
Yeah, yeah. Presumably that was part where rebellions were more successful or that kind of thing. Yeah. These are the people who I'm connected to. So if you knew your history, But you can pick it up kind of in context, for sure.
And then she takes the heat after she kills Ito in a draw. In a duel, rather. Not a draw. She won it. and then for her troubles, she gets beheaded. And then, as we got loads of time left, let's have a song. And then head to the
sexy
pub.
Sexy dance number, which is really weird because she's like dressing as herself from the past, and the rest of the girls are the squadron that killed her. I was like, that's a weird way to do the song. It's a good song, but weird take, Zombielands. Thoroughly enjoyed this one. Like, even though it went down the lines we thought, like, because it set it up in a way that you could kind of predict it, it was very satisfying. And the bit with the it literally like comes out and says it with the bartender as well, which is fun.
Yeah, just in case you didn't get, because he's behaving slightly differently until he gets his medicine and takes his medicine in the past. Yeah, it does make it absolutely clear. And it's like, oh yeah, they know each other. And then now I'm more convinced than ever that the time limit is like, how long is it before they spot that these people are zombies?
Because, yeah, he took the medicine and didn't die, or presumably made himself immortal.
Or continue to be immortal if he is the person people assume he is.
Yeah, that's the other fucking thing, yeah.
But yeah, good episode. Episode 9, so I guess we got 3 or 4 episodes left.
Yeah, I think so.
Then we got Dino Zenon, episode 10. Which memories do you regret?
You know it's going to be good when the animation fucking jumps a level up. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, it reminded me of, is it Windy Tales? I don't know. That was a show I didn't watch at the time, and then I've gone back and at least seen the animation. And it. I think that's what this was reminding me of. So, there's a big old kaiju shows up. And the little one of the eugenicists, can't remember his name, the one in the sailor suit, is like, oh, this is the one I've been waiting for. And your lady eugenicist tries to control it, she disappears. And then they all disappear. And then people are disappearing all over town. Yume disappears. This appears to be absorbing people. And they're like, well, how are we going to get them back? And Gam was like, we go through the mouth.
Because it's like because it absorbs Yume, he can detect it with his submarine. Yes. That is like it's inside the monster, so it's absorbing things into it. I love besides when it gets to the later visuals, which are fantastic. I really love the thing of like their shadow stays on the ground where they disappeared, and when the monster starts just like disappearing buildings, like they just turn into like a black sort of imprint, like a grid fucking map. In like a D&D thing or something like that, but just like it just flattens the whole fucking land. It's just really, really kind of horrifying, unnerving visuals. Like, yeah.
Yomogi has to go in the mouth because the other two get absorbed as well. It's just by the end, it's
on
just
the way up on the lift.
It's just the second and Chise are the only ones not absorbed.
Because they take Goldberg and fly up into the sky. Grid Knight shows up, is like, I'll take care of this, immediately turns into a shadow. It's just like, oh fuck, we're screwed. Sorry. Yeah, no, nice. I thought I had the wrong name. But yeah, even then, Yamagi kind of gets into the thing that's happening to everyone else, which is they're kind of reliving key points in their past.
Yes. Kind of,
do you want to change this? Do you want to live through it and see how it fucking plays out this time? Or get kind of get lost in it and
see things you didn't see because you ran away before.
Yeah, I said, either live through it or live it differently. And the thing that allows him to get out of it and smash such good visuals, like where he's watching it on a screen.
Yes.
And once he breaks through, he's a dinosaur soldier. Is the his favorite action figure is the thing that gets him through.
Yes,
but offers no advice other than that. Yeah.
Yeah, essentially, it's you're getting to see all the scarred souls of the title. And they're all quite, like, as we've assumed, they're not quite as dramatic as a show would go for. They're all very realistic things which have just niggled away at their personalities.
Just a thing that
except Galvin's.
Oh no, his one is dramatic as fuck. But the rest of them are just like simple things that would just, like you say, really turn you into a person that maybe you don't even fucking want to be. Like, yeah, that kind of thing.
So yeah, Yamogis is just like meet my mum's new boyfriend.
Like that did suck. Like I saw that scene in the first one. It was like, yeah, this looks terrible. All of this is bad.
Yeah, Kayomi was he ran away from the bag of money, and then he gets to see that she just let the bag of money just blow away in the wind.
What would have been like if we did run off with the money and got a scooter and just fucking headed for the hills, kind of thing?
But then she's like, "Yeah, but it was probably just counterfeit, so it wouldn't have done us any good. So just let it blow away in the wind." I also like the fact when Yamagi shows up, he's like, "A boss," who recognizes her.
Yeah,
as his workplace boss. Now, the curious thing, of course, is that in the flashbacks to Galma, one of the eugenicists ain't there.
Yep, that's very fucking noticeable. Your man isn't wearing glasses as well as another major thing.
Yeah.
But like Galma's obviously in his full uniform. That's the first thing, actually. I did pause this thing on multiple times because it's fucking gorgeous as an episode. Where your one disappears first, the eugenicist one, she kind of sees a glimpse of Gauma in the uniform that they're all, the big uniform that they're all wearing. I think it's more uniform in the past as well, which is interesting.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
And we see it's ancient China, as it was in the original live-action series.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, 5,000 years? I think that works out correctly, right?
Yeah, it's fine. I think it's 5,000 years in the Gridman episode as well.
The
mummy came from. But the longest stuff we get is with Yume. Obviously, that's the thing they've focused on the most throughout the series. She just comes to the conclusion that it didn't matter that whether it was a suicide or accident, because it had the same effect on her regardless.
I think the suggestion was it was entirely an accident. Like
it is, from what we see.
The sister's boyfriend didn't believe that it was a suicide. She wasn't that kind of person, and he was sincere in that. And he moved on from it because he's like, I know she wouldn't have done that to herself. I know she was happy.
Yes.
So it doesn't bug him because obviously the little sister didn't know that she was happy. Yeah. And in this version, she can have a conversation with presumably like what is the actual kind of thing of her sister saying. Is just like, that her sister was always jealous of her because Yume's always more kind of open with people and able to express herself, whereas she has to come up to the is it a floodgate or?
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like she can only practice singing there because she's too embarrassed to try it at home. And she kind of looks at her sister at home with disdain, not because she hates her, but because just like, I wish I could make that connection. I wish I had that kind of honesty and that confidence that you have as a small child, even like, and to be able to express this to like an older version of her sister who could get that, they get to kind of talk it out, and it's like a real catharsis. And even like the visual thing of her being able to solve the Ankh puzzle kind of thing.
The other bit I like is with when they rescue Knight, and Knight's like, I could have rescued myself.
I didn't need you guys. I was like, yeah, that seems like a thing he'd say. What was his memory? It was just back in the last season when he was eating food in the restaurant.
Yeah, I think so.
This is great. which is very like, yeah.
And then after this, Kaiju is kindly given them all the therapy they needed. They go and beat the shit out of.
Yeah, I think the idea was, obviously, it takes you out of the world and traps you in either like a key moment where you could live your life differently if you choose to, or that would fascinate you enough to stay within it. But
yeah,
being able to break through, being able to break the bonds that kind of tie you to your past and like fucking tie you down as a person.
Yes.
Is the trap. But yeah, it does.
It does that, except perhaps for one person from the final.
Well, Gauma like still like did some fucking shit apparently. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because the final shot is we see Gamma running off happy after all the pals, and then it immediately cuts back to him lying in the rain with his shirt off, without the mark on his back. So I think this is like from the past still.
Yeah, yeah.
Or possibly from the future, who knows? So yeah, my suspicion now is that Gamma might be the Akane of the show, that he's the one somehow responsible for everything.
And again, like kind of like her, it's not that he's evil or villainous, it's just that he's misled and thinking he's doing the right thing, that kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah, this is the scenario of like fighting the kaiju is as a distraction from him missing the princess, or question of whether there is a princess at all. Anyway, we'll see where it is. It's definitely, there's something up with him still.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's something up with that, the kid.
The other supremacist who was not there before.
Yes, and was super pleased to see this particular kaiju show up. Because he says it would set them free, didn't he? I think was his line.
It's nearly like is he the good guy? I'm not even.
That's what I'm wondering, yes. I wonder if he's like, oh, by the way, I'm Gridman.
yeah, could easily be something mad like that.
I was Gridman all along. fix a beam. Everyone's souls are fixed up. Yeah, it was a really good episode. I like the way it kind of seems to... It's a good way for doing like a quick bit of resolution to like a lot of the dramatic arcs for all the characters. So therefore, we've only got two episodes left. We could actually get to the science fiction dramatic resolution.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't feel cheaped out with it. And the idea of being able to be trapped in your own past and like the things you did or didn't do or couldn't do. And the idea of being able to resolve them or talk them out or see how things might have went differently. That's really interesting. And like you say, very efficient for sorting out everyone's trauma.
Yes. It reminded me of Lost Village, that episode did. In terms of like,
sure.
This is probably not the best way to get through these sort of issues. But yeah, given the state of mental health care in Japan, maybe a giant monster is the best way of resolving it.
Like, it's interesting to see like the kind of thing of giant monsters meaning different stuff. Obviously, Godzilla was initially like trauma over, you know, Nagasaki, Hiroshima, but like also any kaiju could be like trauma about any fucking thing. Kaiju is a means of dealing with trauma. Fucking wild, but works good, apparently. Hmm.
Exactly. Then we got Back Arrow, episode 22. But what do I live for? Giant Shu has fixed the warper. So he puts it on Back Arrow's bright height, and now he's fixed. And then we get a flashback as to Shu and Bit's plan.
God fucking, like...
Which is almost so too complicated to explain here. You should go and watch. But, okay, so it all hinges on the fact that Shu's conviction is, I think, therefore I am. And a giant robot is never going to be his style. So his bright height is another one of him that he can transfer his consciousness into.
Yeah, so regular Shu falls asleep. We were right. It was a double, essentially. I think Niall suggested that.
Yeah.
I was like, he was quite right. So he creates another Shu that maintains his consciousness. And he is as he's explaining this plan to Bit, he disappears and then comes into the room and is like, yeah, that was my bright height you were talking to. I've got existentialism as a power. Fucking who knew? So my plan is, right, let my if the princess plan doesn't work out with getting Back Arrow down, then I'll go and get myself destroyed. I get my bright height destroyed by Back Arrow. Meanwhile, I'm in the cryopod over here. So that means that once I get destroyed, my consciousness will go to God, because that's what he eats, I think. And if I'm not back in 3 days, just take the bind warper off me, and then I should probably wake up.
Yes.
And she was like, probably. And it's like, it's a pretty good plan. It's not perfect.
Yeah, I like the 3 days thing as well. I was like,
give me 3 days with God, and I'll see what I can do. Dear.
Yeah, so they're like, okay, well, that's all very well and good, so the records, but we need to go and take back Arrow to face justice. Then
he did kill the emperor of our country, and Back Arrow was like, and I did kill a whole bunch of other people as well. So yeah, fair enough. Like,
but President Brian is here to the rescue.
Sorry. You're
President
in,
of the Pretty Boys.
You're in Bashonan territory right now, so technically he's in our jurisdiction, and this would be a war crime if you fucking take him out, basically.
Yes. So why don't we all go and have lunch and talk about whether or not we want to kill or debate God?
That was so good, because not only do they all go up to the fucking replicator in the thing and just go like, wow, this is really great. And they're all having like, they're all just hanging out, eating, and then they just have the meeting there in the lunchroom.
Yes.
Oh, it's so good.
It's like leaning back across chairs. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. I love that. Oh, so good.
So yeah, the Reckons want to get to God and kill him. And the Grand Edgers are like, well, I think we should get to him and then we can see whether he can be reasoned with. But they both basically come, well, we both want to get there so we can argue about what we're going to do to God once we get there.
Yeah, I mean, like basically the same problem. It doesn't matter whether we want to talk him down or kick his ass, because we still need to get there is the fucking problem. Because Shu explains the universe to them using this handy diagram that he's prepared earlier.
Yes, so the universe is a snowflake with God at the center and various worlds at the tips of the snowflakes, which absorb conviction to feed God in the middle.
So Lingalind is the name of their world?
Lins, aren't they?
Lins are each of the worlds. Yes. Yeah, so each of these enclosed little worlds, people die in them, and then they have conviction, and, you know, the Bryites are a way to purify that, get the really good sauce for God. And when they die, their conviction, their self, goes to God, which presumably he feeds on. And God's at the center of all this branching... like you say, snowflake plant-like fucking diagram. Yeah.
There's various other sci-fi reasons why they can't get out. And then Back Arrow remembers, oh, well, yeah, I've been outside. I came in through the Rakugo holes. And so...
And they're all like, oh, shit, you can go that way? Okay.
And then he has a deal with Kai.
I still gotta fucking see if... Like, you did kill the Emperor and shit. I still gotta see if you... Not, he doesn't have to see his conviction, because he's not convinced that Back Arrow deserves to live, because Back Arrow is just like, yeah, but you're all wishy-washy and you don't know what the fuck you want.
Yeah, and Back Arrow, the fight basically makes Arrow remember what the people made him into, because he met them.
Well, he came as the destroyer, but he met them and he liked them and he wanted to support them in what they wanted. He wanted to get past the wall. That's the thing he started with. But he also kept putting that aside to help them. So obviously, he is He is the conviction of Lingalind, I think.
Yes.
Of the everyone he's met.
I mean, I suspect he's God. This was the point at which I was like, oh yeah. Particularly because we've had like the free-faced thing. So I think he's definitely going to go for like, there's a God in the center, but there's also a God here in the form of Arrow.
Yeah.
Would be my suspicions.
An aspect of God rather than. Which is why he wants to go past the wall, because he wants to go back where he is.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I was like, oh yeah, so it's like the different attitudes towards God. So it's like God is what. So you could use God for good, like the people, like the people on Grand Edger has by like Arrow, whereas you've got people like Rudolph. You want to use him for ill. So yeah, he was doing this fight and like him thinking back on all the interactions he's had with the people in the show. I was like, yeah, I really think that's going to be the reveal. That Arrow was God all along.
And I guess they're playing on that thing. If instead of like omnipresent, like out there kind of God doesn't have feelings for the little ants that crawling around on the surface. If you could actually go down and fucking interact with them.
Yes.
It's just like, yeah, they're all people. They all got like loves, hopes, desires, like hates. Like they're more interesting that way, and you'd be less flippant about fucking eating them if you were more like that. I think the only thing that bothered me in this episode was the girls kind of clinging to him, and I was like, come on, don't stop those two being lesbians. Don't do this to me, show. I hope it was just like emotional stuntedness was what they were trying to play with, rather than both the girls like him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we've got Dragon Quest, The Adventure of Dai, episode 35, The Incident at the Finals.
Fucking, you start the martial arts tournament one episode, you fucking finish it with the bad guy cancelling it and doing his evil plan the second episode. That's how it's done.
But Mom is like, I'm not helping you with this sword so you can kill your dad. And they're like, no, that's not what we want the sword for, Mom. We just want the sword so that we show Dai's dad that Dai's better than him.
Yeah, like he needs to be able to like match him, because otherwise his dad will just roll up and kill him. So, yeah. Just to best him, not to murder him.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think we just see the rats fight and Marb's fight. The rat loses because his arms aren't long enough.
It's like, that's a key flaw in your kung fu. It's like you've been mostly fighting rocks, which don't fight back, as one of them points out. And you're too short. I like this conversation with Dai, where Dai's like, hey, you could just like, you know, do flying headbutts and shit. And the rat's like, do you think a hero would do that? And he's like, nah, that's pretty lame. Which is weird, because Dai's also got a short reach. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Longer one than him, though.
It's still longer than him, yeah.
We get the 8 finalists who are like fairly normal. And then you get to the 8th guy, who is a guy dressed as a ghost.
Seemingly a naked guy under a blanket with a ghost face on it. What is his deal? And all the rest of them are trying to kung fu their way out of the cage, and he's just tickling his way out of it.
Well, he makes intelligent observations when they get trapped inside the big flesh cage.
Yeah, it makes me think he might be good at fighting, but I have no idea how the fuck he managed to be one of the finalists. Now I kind of want to see the tournament. What are you doing to me, Joe?
What's the kid's name? It's the evil scientist's son has shown up.
Oh, he has a name like his dad. It's like Zaguera.
Zaban, is it?
If it's not that, it's pretty close.
Something
to that,
like that, yeah.
But you should have noticed, because he had the pointy ears.
That is true, yes.
Mm.
This guy, he traps them. He's going to turn them into, he's going to experiment on, like his dad has, and turn, it's basically, what's it called in One Punch Man?
Oh, I was going to go Dragon Ball and go like the Red Ribbon Army, like the doctor trying to make the androids kind of thing. It's like, oh, we need, obviously regular troops are crap because they all got their asses kicked. Let's start making some super soldiers. I know the thing you're talking about in One Punch Man.
Yes, because it's a martial arts tournament and the bad guys interrupt to turn them into monsters, don't they?
I mean, again, they probably took that off Dragon Quest, but yeah.
That's like... very similar. so he's going to turn them into monsters, but he's already upgraded his own body when Dai confronts him into something which looks a little less Toriyama-ish than it did in the comic, I suspect. I don't know whether this was one of the things that Toriyama complained about, the design of this lad. I think it's generally...
He made him look a little less silly, and he looks very silly still. So,
he does look quite silly here, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the colour which makes him look, it's all over the place.
Green fur, isn't it?
Yeah, what he reminds me of is like a really goofy Zoonoid from Guyver.
Yeah, I could, like, not a gross one, like a comedy one. Like,
yeah.
Like a kids cartoon version of a Zoonoid.
That is it, yes.
but
because Dai tries his attacks and it doesn't do as much as they are expecting it to, but that's because he's already turned his body into a hyper demon or something.
Mm.
And that's where we're going to leave off, and that'll be the fight next week. Can the martial artists escape the cage? Can Dai?
Mom's just been like sort of sitting there concentrating, so you know she's going to kung fu her way out of that cage. It's going to be cool.
Zamza is his name.
Mm-hmm.
Zaborira's son, yes.
Oh, and they do establish it was last episode they established that Dai can only keep the the Dragon Mark thing up for so long. So this is like, oh, you know the way we introduced like an OP power for him? Like, there's a time limit on it, so he can't keep it up all fucking day.
Wind
so,
it back yeah. a bit, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. He needs to be still fallible so we can put like some asshole's son in, that we've never heard of in front of him and just like, yeah, this is a credible threat now.
Yeah, this was like, oh, this I wasn't expecting this guy to show up because he's not in the credits, but...
He is in his monster form.
That's is what, he? I think, gotcha.
I think Niall suggested that he thought that was what was going to happen to our former Dark Lord when he gets his body upgraded to a super body, but it turns out it's this guy. Is That's what happens to him.
Yes, I imagine Hadley's might be a little cooler when he gets his new body.
Yeah, yeah. The science is more perfected at that stage.
Yeah. Then we got My Hero Academia episode 96, that which is inherited. That was last week, so I'm looking at that the was, wrong page.
Yeah, episode 99, I think.
99, that's it.
Our brawl.
in which that everyone has a brawl.
Hmm.
And they're told, very well done, after they finish the fight. I feel like all the drama happened in the last episode.
Yeah, pretty much. Like we get a lot of fun fucking animation, and it's nice to see some of these guys let loose because we won't see them again for a long fucking time.
That's true. Yes.
So yeah, it is. It's a pretty fun one, and they score four of them in the cage, but one of the girl who looks like
Ultraman.
Oh, I was going to say fucking, what's your man in DC Comics? He's like a space adventure guy with like a jetpack. And a
Adam Strange, but it's definitely Ultraman that she's a reference
yeah,
to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Her costume reminded me of Adam Strange, but yeah, I think you're right about the Ultraman.
Because she's got the grow power.
The size thing. But not of herself. But she's stuck to a pipe, I think, so they can't get her in. But everyone else is in. So they don't score as well as Bakugo's team, and it was a little less clean. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And Manita gets his head thrown into Mina's boobs.
He fucking planned it, little fucking creep.
did appear to knock him out. But...
Yeah. I mean, like, she does fucking punch him afterwards at the enemies, and he's just slowly regaining consciousness while flying at them. Because all the other women on the team do not want to get creeped on by him. But, again, we won't see these guys for a while, so on a positive note, we won't see him creeping on people for a long fucking time.
Yeah, I think the best bit of it is the stuff with, is it Momona, the copy guy?
He gets a lot in this. I'm glad he actually got as much. He's a much more interesting character in these episodes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because it's like the number of powers he can copy, how long he can copy them for, whether he can copy them or not, and like be able to bluff with like which powers have I currently copied. Or using a power and having its effect take place later.
Yeah, like even Ararika, like bringing him into the cage is kind of like still not talking. And was like, I don't know what other power you got. I know two of them, but I don't know what the third one is. And he actually uses that in the cage to get an extra hit on Midoriya to try and create an opening. Doesn't work, but it's a very technical one, a very like thinky man's one, and it's fun for that. Yeah,
yeah, and he gets him over that he's not just an asshole; he is an intelligent fighter as well. Mm. It's
almost like he plays up being the asshole to like rile people up, but a little too much.
Yes.
Mm.
Well, I think it's like there's definitely a little bit of an inferiority complex with him because
he can't work out by himself.
Yes,
basically.
He needs
to support other people, so.
Yeah, his quirk is other people's quirks, which I guess is probably a razor would probably feel similar. It's like his quirk is to take away other people's quirks.
Yeah, yeah, it's like he needs the kind of special training that your man does as well. And he straight up says to the teachers that this was my test to see if I get into the hero course,
yes,
right? And he knows like, yeah, but I fucked it up, didn't I? It's like, yeah, and they're like, no, dude. That's a pass. What are you talking about? You did a good fucking job. You showed a lot of gumption. You lack experience, basically. That's it.
But he does have my favorite recurring gag of Mina teasing Hiravati about Deku.
Ah, that's so good. Oh, you really went right in there and hugged him, huh? Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
It's always a funny Shonen thing of like having only one character acknowledge that romance is a thing, even if other characters are feeling romantic thoughts.
Yeah, they're all awkward teens, but she's kind of like boy crazy. So when she finds out a friend of hers likes a boy, she's like, ooh, you know, she's just excited by it. It's fun for her and it's fun for us to watch. So yeah, it's great stuff.
Then there's also like a little thing about like how he's doing so well because of Banjo's talk. What a great guy. His big, bald uncle covered in Rob Liefeld pouches.
I'm going to be glad to see more of that guy. He's fun. Yeah.
He is fun. He's definitely the one who will talk the most. So,
one of them has to.
Yes.
He's
like almost like the replacement for All Might, even though All Might hasn't died yet.
He's right there.
He's still alive.
He doesn't know what's going on. He has to ring other people on the phone to ask what's going on. Oh, dear.
Then we've got Welcome to Demon School, Arumakun, Episode 8, The Miracle of Some Fools. Just got one more stamp to get. But oh no, Kaleko's got a trick up his sleeve.
You had to get technicality.
All Ooh. The staffs. Not just the teachers. You had to get all the staff.
Because I think he said all the staff, whereas you interpret that as all the faculty or something.
In the translation, they put faculty, but I wonder whether that was just an Americanism slipped in there. Or slipped in last episode, and therefore has had to be carried over to this episode.
That's true. Yeah, it mightn't translate the same way. But, like, I mentioned to get, like, everyone's approval, like, the lunch room, the gardeners, like, all the cleaning staff, everyone. And the room was like, ah, fuck. We were so fucking close. We did so fucking good. But fortunately, one of the gardeners is shut up. Go like, hey, we got you one of those things. We heard you were looking for him. But it probably is not going to do you any good now. And it's like, and Arum was like, yeah, we didn't have enough, so it's cool, but no, thank you. And it's like, hey guys, he needs more. They're all there. It makes sense because he has been helping these motherfuckers the whole time. It doesn't feel like a Deus Ex Machina kind of thing.
No.
It's like, no. Arum is a really sound kid. It makes sense that these guys would be like, oh yeah, we're all your fans because he's a nice boy.
And it also feels like, it also didn't feel like a trick that Kaleko was playing on them. He genuinely had wanted them to consider beyond the teaching, consider the entire school. And the fact is, I feel like if it wasn't the evil phase Aruba, he would have got everybody else's.
We've seen several times, like, the evil phase Aruma was very not flippant with the lower guys, because they'd be like, oh, Aruma, can you help us clean up this rubbish? She's like, I don't really have the time. Yeah, I'll do it. Like, whereas Aruma would just go out of his way to do it.
Yes. The normal Aruma would never have got into this position in the first place.
Would never have pushed himself so far. Yeah.
So it's the evil phase has to thank the normal Aruma for being so nice throughout the previous season and the previous episodes of this season.
Mm-hmm.
That everybody loves him already. But yeah, it was lovely and sweet because it's like, yeah, realization, because you know how lovely Aruma's been all the time, and you're like, okay, yeah, this is, and it also drives that continuing suspicion that there's some sort of plot, that this is deliberate by somebody to introduce a human into the demon world to make it nicer.
Yeah, to improve it overall.
Now, I do wonder if somewhere down the line, whether at some point a character who we've thought has been a demon all along will also turn out to be a human. But that would be a good twist later down the line.
If one person can get past the border patrol, then why not another? Yeah. Sure.
And they're finally allowed in Royal One.
I was thinking they were going to do like the bait and switch with it. Would it be all dusty and nasty from just disuse? No, it looks great. Looks very nice. There's a big celebration by the student body where they set up a bunch of stalls and everything. And initially your man's like, oh, you're not going to make a big ceremony thing of this. And he's like, fine, I'll do a big ceremony. But then they walk past him once he opens the doors before he gets to finish his speech. It's just really fun stuff, yeah.
They see the big throne that the Demon King used to sit in when he took his lessons. And that's the seat for Aruma. and goes and sits in it, and they're like, he looks just like... And then the next morning, Irina wakes up incredibly guilty about everything that's happened.
Like with a, I stepped over bounds, like a guilt hangover, basically, where it just has to profusely apologize to everyone constantly. And everyone's just like, no, dude, it's fine. It's like, it happens everyone now and again, so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And also, they like seeing the fact that it's all Daruma.
Yes, yeah. As much as they like the other one, they like this one better. Yeah, and then we get the thing of like, oh, it's the flower that he helped the gardeners plant, and it's bloomed into such a beautiful flower. And I was like, ah, there we go, that's your metaphor for... For whatever is going on, deliberately or by accident, in the plot. And then we get Kalego gets to do the Tsukima this time.
That's a good one, yeah. Ah, dear.
Aruma is a good boy again, and they take another photo.
And they can't decide whether... I mean, like, they don't like one Aruma over the other. They're glad to see the old one back, but there's like, the other one was really cool, though, so they love them both equally, because they're both the same guy.
Yep. I believe we'll eventually see the other one again at some point, and I believe we'll also eventually see a evil phase version of the idol version of Aruma, at least from pictures I've seen of the comic.
Your one is going to be so, like, sexually confused. Yes. Yeah. Fucking hell. dear. Yeah, this show continues to be excellent fucking fun.
And then finally, Thunderbolt Fantasy Sword Seekers 3, Episode 10, Secrets of the Sacred Swords.
Oof. All right, let me try and blast through this as quickly as possible. So... we get Chang Buhan kind of heading back to, who's your man who made the swords? Bai Lian, this very fancy dude. And Chang Buhan has a conversation with him, and he's like, okay, so you're not actually like some mystical god who gave us these swords to fight demons. He's like, no, I fell down from that, like, Aurora Borealis. Like, it's from like another world. I fell down here and I was like, oh, the swords I make can hurt demons. Cool. I'll help people out with that. But Chang Buhan's like, yeah, check out this scroll index I got. And your man looks at him and is like, I can tell just from looking at this that these have shed like a lot of person blood as well and caused a lot of misery. And so it kind of like, is he like second guessing himself? Should I keep making these demon killing swords? And Chang Buhan is like, yeah, but like you can't not, because like it's not that the future's set. I'm glad that the person met him wasn't some other unknowing otherworldly god. It was some fallible human. And they did help people, like, you know, killing the demons and everything, and they did hurt people, but that's okay. Like that you fucked up like that. You just keep doing you, and I'll go back to the future and figure it out. And they kind of become friends over it. And it's like, okay, you're not actually the guy that caused me trouble. You're just another guy barely trying to survive and make sure people do okay, much like Buhan himself. And then he slides back to the present. And I was just like, oh, that's all nice. Done very well, very, very calm kind of thing. And then we get Lang Wu Yao, who's like watching the fight while the ghost of demons past fucking talks to him and says, hey, you could interfere with the fight, you could do something about it, but I tell you what, if you do, remember the first season when Shang Wuhan stopped this guy from reviving like the Demon King thing? Here's what's going to happen if you stop this now. Shang Wuhan won't go and get the Sorcerer's Index, and this fucking Demon King will come out and start everything anew. So you should probably let it happen. And much against his better judgment, he does. And it kind of cuts him up inside, obviously, because it's like, that sucks. I got to watch his friend get her eyes chopped off again. But, you know, the threads of fate and all that kind of thing. Meantime, at the same time, because it's time travel, it's hard to say. We got Xinghai is having a conversation with her elder sister, who is a sword, while she's taking off all her clothes and getting the enigmatic Gale to give her a massage. They really worked on making that puppet like have malleable legs that his dexterous puppet fingers could massage. And I was like, fucking hell, there's some horny puppeteers here. It's great.
Oh, did you not want the old Gerry Anderson thing of a close-up and it would just be a real leg and a real hand?
Oh, like on... what's the one with the priest? Secret Service, was it?
Secret Service, yeah, with Stanley Unwin.
Yeah, Fuck, I gotta watch that again. I that would have been fine, but I appreciate the level of detail they went for horny puppet show. That was very fun, and she's talking like he seems to be fully under control, and I'm still thinking it's like he's probably bullshitting, but they do talk to him. It's like, okay, we got a job for you now. Pick me up as a sword and go do the job. And he's like, yes, my girlfriend's sword, I will go do that. Shang Bohen arrives back to the present, and excuse me, Quan Yun is there to meet him, and the one-eyed former spearman, now swordsman, is there, and he's saying to Quan Yun, is like, oh, fucking shit's going a little fucked right now. Tell you what, I'm going to give you the Sorcerer's Scroll Index. You go hide somewhere with it, and we'll fucking take care of these demons, because I can't get them getting that Scroll Index. And he's like, yeah, no problem, Shang Bohan, I'll do that. And I was like, ooh, is he in disguise? Is something going on here? And it's kind of setting you up for suspiciousness. But as he's walking off, he's like, hey, look out behind you, Quan Yun. And he turns around going like, what? And it is Lin Setsu there with the demon sword, apparently stabbing him. Fucking cliffhanger. You can't do that to me, Sho. That's not fucking fair. But yeah, I mean, like, not much action set pieces happening this episode. I, again, thoroughly enjoyed it. And horny puppeteers, man. Had to happen.
Righty-ho. That has got through this double quick time. So we'll be back next Wednesday. It's Tuesday today, so it'll be Wednesday next week. With another one of these Let's Go episodes, hopefully with Niall back fighting fit, because it'll be another 8 or 12 weeks before he gets his second jab.
Hope you get better soon, bud. I haven't got my fucking first yet, so we'll see if that continues for me and how that fucking goes. But people being healthier and being safer, I'm always in favor for.
Exactly. So we'll be back with more of the same next week. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Bye. Okay.
Right. Whew. There we go. Righty-ho. Let me see.
I realized I should probably finish that quicker because I forgot to bring my drink in.